What's up? This is Movies On Up, episode 40. Dave and I together forever, or else. That is the tagline for this week, and that is also the name of my co-host, who's sipping his tea right now, so I'll kill a little time to let his throat get all sassified.
My throat's all jacked up. My throat's a mess right now.
He's been just blowing dudes like it's going out of style.
Trying to get some protein shots to fix my throat. Not working.
He's trying to make that extra money. And why is Dave trying to earn extra money? It's not because he's down on his luck. It's because we're trying to build up our cache of prizes to give away for folks that participate in our tagline contest. If you think you know what movie Together Forever or Else comes from, send it to us in an email, moviesonup@gmail.com, or you can tweet it at us at moviesonup, or you can leave it on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/moviesonup. Here's a hint. If you go to our website, moviesonup.com, our post for last week's episode has a picture of that movie. So really all you got to do is figure out what movie that picture's from, or just your old
Google image search that picture.
Yeah. Either way, figure it out. Send it to us. If you're right, if we like you, we'll go ahead and send you a prize package, and you'll probably be our first one because we have yet to do that yet. Do we have people that actually have one?
Yeah, there's a queue lit. Like, I have a queue of people waiting for it. We just haven't sent anything out
yet. So what we're going to need those people to do is send us probably their...
We'll get it.
Send us their address so that we can...
It's only been 40 episodes. I've been waiting for the right time.
Yeah, maybe we wait till 50 and start sending them out. We're going to have to do something special for 50. It may as well be like giving back to the community.
Saying what we've said we would do since episode one.
Yeah, that's true. When Dave reaches out to you, please send us back your information so that we can mail you your prize package. We will not be looking to steal your identity, which I guess was the point of the Jason Bateman movie this weekend, Identity Thief. Jason Bateman, Melissa McCarthy, that's going to make all of the money, right? That's going to be the big comedy.
As far as we said it last week, as far as just like, for the dumb, shut your mind off, go to the movie theater. This is like the first one of the year with like star power and everything. And it came through. There was talk that the hurricane up north would deter people. No. Came in number one with $34.5 million. That's on a $35 million budget. So they had a formula and it worked. What's interesting is that Warm Bodies was in second with another $11 million. Side Effects, the other new release, came in at $9.3 million. Silver Linings Playbook still only dropped 17% for $6 million. Then Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters at $5 million. Those four movies combined, $31 million. So the number one movie brought in more than two the through next, five combined. Yeah. But yeah, it was a hit, I guess. Silver Linings, its 13th week of release. Realized not all of those were wide, but it's still in the top five. Argo, 18 weeks in release, still in the top 10, which is pretty impressive.
Does that say more about how good those movies are, or does it just say that the movies that are out now suck? I'm leaning the movies that are out now suck.
No, I think timing-wise, Argo and Silver Linings both may not be something to get you out right away like the casual moviegoer, but I think as word of mouth goes, I think they just hit it right with timing. The awards buzz and everything. So, because Argo, that's 18 weeks of wide release to still be in the top 10. That's pretty.
Yeah, I'm not taking anything away from those movies. I'm just saying I think it's more a reflection of there's nothing else to see. So people will give, you know, if they haven't gotten around to see Argo 17 weeks after it was released, well, maybe. Because what else am I going to do? Am I going to sit through Hansel and Gretel? Probably not.
Yeah. I mean, as far as outside of Zero Dark Thirty, there's really nothing until maybe Side Effects came out this week that will challenge you as a like movie watcher.
Nothing that was serious,
yes,
really.
There was nothing like...
They've been ridiculous horror movies. They've been comedies, air quoting that, of course.
Yeah. And 11th was Top Gun 3D, only on 300 screens, brought in $1.9 million. So that was the biggest performing limited release. Glimpse Inside the Mind of Charles Swan, the third, was only on two screens. It brought in $12,000, $6,000 per screen, which is pretty respectable.
Yeah, I mean, there really wasn't a whole lot that came out last week. That'll change for this week. We've got some more new releases that we'll get to at the end. Yeah, box office, maybe not an exciting, a sexy segment of the show this week, but I think news, we've got quite a bit. There's been a couple times this year where we've sat down and haven't had much news to talk about. We kind of got a shit ton this week. And it was pretty much right after we finished recording our show last week. We actually went a day early and then just got a bunch of Star Wars news, literally like as I was wrapping up editing that podcast. Disney planning Solo Star Wars film, and a Fett one too. After rumors surfaced of a possible Yoda standalone film, Disney has confirmed that there are plans for standalone films and that young Han Solo and Boba Fett will be getting the spin-off treatment. The films are still obviously very early in development phases, but are hoped to be released between episodes 7, 8, and 9. So, you know, you could have conceivably a new Star Wars movie for the next 6 years.
And that's what I said from once Disney bought Star Wars, was why aren't they doing like a young Boba Fett, like a young Han Solo? I think that was the obvious choice, even if you don't do a 7, 8, and 9. I think that'll be cool. Boba Fett, you could tell a lot of stories because you don't really get into his story a whole lot in the Star Wars movies. Han Solo had a lot of adventures before he even ever met a Skywalker. So, yes.
On the one hand, I am kind of excited about it. You know, we went from having 6 Star Wars movies to now, I mean, I guess if you want to count the Clone Wars movie, I guess there was 7, the cartoon. But now they've just essentially announced another 6 that we're going to have. So I'm excited about that. I am a little bummed that now I know that pretty much every novel I've read since I graduated from high school has just been, you know, pretty much cast out.
I'm fine with that because I haven't read any of them.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people haven't read them. But there's a healthy segment of Star Wars fans that for a while, that's all we had was the expanded universe. This was before the prequels. So I would say probably from the late 90s, well, maybe like the mid 90s, there was a good 7-8 years where that's, if you wanted Star Wars, that's where you had to go. And all that stuff's going to get shit on. But, you know, I guess the trade-off is more movies. Disney's got it. They paid a bunch to get Star Wars. So I guess this is the way they're going to make their money back, by coming out with more movies than we thought.
And when you cast Han Solo, it has to be dead on. Like, you have to nail it. Who would you like to see as young Han Solo?
It depends on how young they want to go. I mean, I think Harrison Ford was in his
33.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know he was in his early 30s.
Or actually, it might have been mid to late.
Yeah, okay.
I did look it up.
Well, we'll say like 35.
Yeah.
I know he was in his 30s. I don't think he was in his late 30s when he did New Hope. So if you're going to have a younger version of Han Solo, it's got to be someone that is younger or looks younger than Harrison Ford did.
Westy, he wants somebody from Lost.
The fat guy, Hurley.
Hurley from Lost.
Yeah, apparently. All right. I'll buy that, sure.
You know who I say? Jai Courtney.
No. Maybe I'll hold off until I see Die Hard, but no, I don't think
he
so.
He looks like a young, like, he's got this natural swagger to him. He's got a lot, looks-wise, about what young Harrison Ford did.
You know what? I mean, I don't have a better suggestion. I really don't. I just don't like that one. But, I mean, I think that'll be the most difficult of the spinoff characters to cast. Obviously, a young Boba Fett. You've got
Who
one.
Who cares about? Like, the casting isn't... He's not filling in anybody's shoes there.
Well, no, but, I mean, you could use Daniel Logan, who played young Boba Fett in the prequels. He'd be of a decent age to do it, and most of the time he's in the armor anyway, so it doesn't matter. And Yoda's going to be CGI anyway, which is going to blow.
Daniel Logan can't carry a movie, though.
It doesn't matter. It's a Star Wars movie, for Christ's sake. Matt, you don't have to be a good actor to be in Star Wars. Just ask Hayden Christensen.
No.
Hell, one person that I'm pretty sure will not be appearing as Han Solo, but he will be appearing in a Han Solo-type role. The Wachowskis are going Solo with Sean Bean. Bean will play what has been described as an older Han Solo type in Jupiter Ascending. Also added to the cast, Douglas Booth. You probably didn't see him in that Miley Cyrus joint, LOL, but he will join C. Tate's Mila Kunis and Eddie Redmayne in the Wachowskis' $200 million follow-up to Cloud Atlas.
Yeah, I think they're regretting that $200 million budget right about now. Because Cloud Atlas didn't do what they
wanted. No, it underperformed. This one...
That's being very generous.
It underperformed. That's a fact. But this one, I don't think is going to be... I think it'll be more straight-up sci-fi and not as weird. Cloud Atlas was weird. It was good. I maintain it was good. But... it's goddamn weird and tough to follow. I think this is going to be just a straight sci-fi flick that I think will be more accessible.
Oh, like
to people.
Speed Racer?
No, not at all like Speed Racer. I don't know because the details on it are kind of hush hush. I guess it involves an assassination attempt on Mila Kunis by the Queen of the Universe.
I just don't understand why the Wachowskis are still getting these kind of budgets. I just don't. They're They had one hit essentially.
Yeah, but if somebody gives you $200 million to make a movie, you're not going to take it?
No, I don't blame them for taking
right.
it. Who's giving them these budgets?
Somebody's
doing
it.
Like, how is Gore Verbinski still working? Like, it's the same.
I don't know. I'm kind of interested in this one. I was interested in Cloud Atlas. It wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be. But I'm willing to give this one a try. I think there's...
Well, you know, if you and the four other people that saw Cloud Atlas can each get just one other person to go with you to see this.
Well, then it'll make twice as much as it did. Yeah. I see your logic there.
And it'll still be about $150 million short.
Between the eight of us, we're going to... What the fuck kind of tickets are we buying for $50 million? Your math just fell apart. That is the part where the math breaks down. Star-Lord has risen. We'll just keep staying in the stars with our next story. After searching the universe and considering a ton of actors, Marvel has finally found their lead for Guardians of the Galaxy. And it is, drumroll please, Chris Pratt. From Zero Dark Thirty, Moneyball, and Parks and Rec. He snatches the role of Peter Quill. Not at all. Completely out of left field for me.
We've mentioned a dozen actors that have been in rumors, have tested, have been mentioned by the
And
studio,
all would have been awesome.
And none of them were Chris Pratt. But you know what? I like Chris Pratt just as much as any of them. Really.
I guess I really don't have a strong opinion of him one way or the other. It doesn't piss me off to hear that. It just does seem very, on the one hand, it seems very surprising given the list of names that were on there. But I guess on the other hand, like, maybe you don't want a huge, huge name in Guardians of the Galaxy.
And none of the names that they were looking at were really huge, huge names. Some of them were bigger names, but none of
yeah.
them were huge.
Right. But I guess that's what I mean. At least the guys that were on that list before did seem like they had bigger names that
and,
maybe...
I mean, Chris Pratt has built up such a nice career so far. I mean, he was in Moneyball, Oscar-nominated movie, did really well in it, wasn't asked to do a lot, but delivered.
Zero Dark Thirty.
Did what he was supposed to do, and he's awesome on Parks and Rec. So I think it's going to be a mix of... He seems like the kind of actor that would lead a James Gunn action movie. He could do the serious dramatic,
yeah.
and he's hilarious.
And he's got the physicality, too.
Yeah,
so.
He got cut for Moneyball.
Jesus, dude. You just turned...
And Zero Dark Thirty.
You just turned like whole hog gay right there.
He gets cut.
That was freaky. Justice League, don't assemble just yet. Rumor has it that Warner Brothers has soured on the script by Will Beale and are looking to scrap it and start from scratch. Or just let the whole thing fall apart. What the fuck?
At this point, they need to just step back. The thing is now is that they're going to wait and see how Superman's received. You know what? I had no problem with Will Beale writing the script until I saw Gangster Squad, which Will Beale wrote, and was terribly written. Gangster Squad was one of the worst written movies I've seen in a long time. He's not who I want handling Justice League. They need to just...
He's not who we thought they were.
Yeah. They need to just sit back and just take a smarter approach to it instead of rushing, which is what I said from the beginning. They're rushing this.
They realize that there's a window that they have to hit or Marvel is absolutely going to lap them. Now, some could make the argument that they've already done that. But yes, you need to make that window, but you also need to not suck. You have one shot at this. If you fuck up Justice League, anything that your spinoff movies that come after it, nobody's going to give a shit. Marvel doing it the opposite way, Iron Man was good. Thor was all right. Captain America was good. And then by that time, you had a history of success, and it just led right into the Avengers. This has got to be a success, or essentially, all the DC products are going to go right in the shit can.
I think the approach here is wait and see how Superman's received. if that is received well, make other DC movies in that vein and use that as a launching off point.
So take the Marvel strategy.
Marvel strategy. If that isn't received well, fuck you, Superman. We're starting over. You come out with a new Batman. You come out with a new Superman. And then you lead up to it, which I understood what they wanted to do, where they want to compete with the Avengers and rush to it. But if you think about it, sometimes you just got to let number one be number one for a while and then be there when they're ready to fall. So if DC starts taking their time now and puts out a work on a Flash movie, a new Batman, a Wonder Woman, and get all the cards, by the time Phase 3, who knows if there's still going to be interest. Like, Marvel could lose some steam, and then you jump in there with Justice League. Because by Avengers 3, do people still care as much?
That's exactly the point. By the time Avengers 3 comes, are people going to be over comic book movies? And is it just going to be too damn late?
Or are they going to be over those comic book movies?
Right. And that door could swing both ways. But I could see where you wouldn't want to have all your eggs in the, well, we'll just wait for people to get burned out on Marvel, but they'll be really hungry for our shit. At that point, you know, the boat may have sailed.
I think the main thing, though, is you have to do it right. It has to be good.
Yeah, yeah.
The timing, fuck timing. If it's good, it's not going to matter when you get it out, essentially. So do it right. Because, I mean, they apparently the script is why they couldn't latch on to a director, because no director wanted
to direct that shit.
Direct the shit, and apparently they tried to sweeten the deal to Affleck by wanting him to be Batman as well as direct. So,
man, they didn't offer me to be Batman. I'd direct it and be Batman. That'd be all right. So apparently, the way this script was written, Justice League probably would not have been a hit. And this next movie still probably won't be a hit, man. Fox has hired Paul Walker to star in their reboot of the Hitman franchise, Agent 47. Skip Woods and Michael Finch of Die Hard 5 will be writing the script, with Alexander Bach, a commercial director, directing what is probably going to be a turd.
And here's the thing, is you brought on Skip Woods and Michael Finch to write the script, and you're changing the name from Hitman to Agent 47 because you realize the first one was a shitter. Who wrote the first one? One of these guys. I forget which one, Woods or Finch. One of them wrote the first one. So you're rebooting your own script. What the fuck sense does that make?
I don't know that it makes a whole lot of sense at all. I think I think this video game franchise is pretty much dead.
It's an awesome concept if they can make it work.
Yeah.
I don't think Paul Walker is the one to make it work.
No, he's more of I picture.
When was the last time Paul Walker even attempted to headline a movie that wasn't a Fast Five or Fast and the Furious movie?
That's a good question.
He was in that one where he got hit in the face with a hockey puck.
Maybe we'll answer it later. I don't know. But I think Paul Walker is more, you know, just action, fast-paced action, which is not even what the Hitman games were about. It was about stealth, and it was about assassinations. That could be kind of cool, but they're just going to, you know, put it on steroids, and it's going to
cast Paul Walker.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, Timothy Oliphant is a hell of an actor, and that thing sunk with him. I can't imagine that switching him out for Paul Walker, that's not an upgrade. If you've got half of the writing team is going to remain from the turd that was the original one, again, you're not upgrading. A turd by any other name would smell as shitty, and I just guess that's where we're heading on this one. The team behind Bellflower are looking to make Chuck Hank and the San Diego Twins. The story is heavily influenced by 80s action movies and fighting video games. Jonathan Keevil wrote it and will be directing the movie, starring Tyler Dawson and Evan Gladell.
I only put this on there because Bellflower is one of like the most
hot or
cold movies for me last year. Like, I loved what they were trying to do, but hated the overall execution. It's weird that Glodell is just acting in this, because I thought I really liked how Bellflower was directed, and I liked his performance as a director on that movie better than his performance as an actor. But I got to admit, this story, I think it'll be awesome. If you go to coatwolf.com, they're trying to raise some money to pay for some of the effects. They made like a little fun little video, kind of gives you an idea of the feel of the movie. I'm excited for it. I mean, Bellflower, it's now on Netflix Instant. So watch it and let us know what you think, because I honestly, I think I hated it, but I still liked a little bit about it. So just watch Bellflower, because I honestly still don't know how I feel about that movie. But I know I liked it enough, or I liked enough about it, that I want to see what they do next.
That'd be a good Valentine's movie, right?
Oh, absolutely. If you cut it off about an hour into it. The first hour, awesome Valentine's Day movie. Wait and watch the next half after you break up.
The day after.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
But yeah, I mean, I think the subject matter sounds kind of right up my alley. And I did like Bellflower. I mean, did I love it? No. But I thought it was kind of quirky and interesting. So I'm with that. I'd like to see more.
And I think this Chuck Hank and the San Diego Twins will be able to play with that quirky and uniqueness a little bit more than a straight up kind of love story, kind of.
Exactly.
Because I think they're giving themselves a lot more room to be ambitious and unique. But seriously, go to cultwolf.com and watch the video, because it shows some cool stuff. I'm on board with the idea.
And go to netflix.com and check watch out Bellflower. Bellflower. Netflix, you owe us 5 cents. Since he's got so much extra time on his hands, J.J. Abrams is apparently working closely with Gabe Newell of Valve Software to bring Half-Life and Portal to the big screen. Those are video games that are still actually relevant.
I don't know. I don't know enough about either one of them, but I'd probably see them if there's good people involved.
A Portal is essentially, it's a puzzle game where you have a gun that makes holes, and you jump through them, and you try and essentially get to the end of the level as quickly as possible. The concept is very simple, but I think you could do neat things with it. Half-Life is, I guess, I could see that ending up like Doom. I know there's better people involved, but I could see it heading that way, and that kind of, I don't like video game movies just for the sake of video game movies.
People are freaking out because it's like, oh, JJ has Star Trek and Star Wars. He still owns Bad Robot. Like, Bad Robot's still going to make movies no matter how busy JJ Abrams is. So, I mean, it's not like he's going to direct Half-Life and Portal. He may be attached as a producer. He may have some say, but it's not like he's going to be, it's not like they're going to, it's not, oh, Star Wars, you're going to have to wait. I'm making these two video game movies.
Yeah, excuse me. I have to make Portal. Yeah, I don't think that's going to work. Move over, Willow Smith. Quvenzhan Hush Puppy is likely Will Gluck's Annie in the modern-day retelling of the classic orphan musical produced by Will and Jada Pinkett Smith and Jay-Z. Sean
so Carter. Black Annie.
Blanny.
Oh, Jesus. That's all it is. But, I mean, it's pretty awesome if Quadzavala Wallace gets the role over Willow Smith.
Yeah, over their damn daughter.
Yeah, so
that would be for an awkward dinner conversation.
Yeah,
do you think
they could just reboot the next Karate Kid and hire Willow Smith?
Oh shit, another awkward dinner conversation. Do you think that this is Jay-Z saying, "No, we're not casting your kid, dog"?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how they function. I really don't like. I don't know. I haven't seen her act. Like, Jaden, at least, in smaller parts, can act somewhat, but...
Yeah, that one where he played his dad's son.
Yeah.
Was pretty
and
okay.
He's got that other one coming out this
where
summer
playing
where he plays his
son.
Dad's son.
Right, exactly.
But, I don't know. I don't like Annie to begin with.
No, I don't
Whether
give a shit.
Whether she's a little redhead bitch or black, I don't care.
All right, now, Annie's a musical. Being this is
I don't like musicals. Oh, it's going to be rappy.
That's what I was going to say. Like, are they going to...
Or hip-hoppy, R&B.
And he's going to have... I think that would be racist. Like, if they're, oh, no, we're going to do a black version, but black people only rap.
Jay-Z did A Hard Knock's Life. It was, yeah. Like, his first, like, major huge hit.
Yeah, well...
One of them.
Well, it was early on in the career, pre-Beyonce, but...
Pre-Beyonce.
Yeah, even that. I like Blanny better. Just move right along before we piss off our black listener. How to Catch a Cast. Ryan Gosling adds Matt Smith and Saoirse Ronan to his debut as a writer, director, or auteur. How to Catch a Monster. They join the cast already, including Christina Hendricks, both of her breasts, Eva Mendes, and Ben Mendelsohn.
I'm on board from the get-go on this. The story sounds awesome. I love that cast. Matt Smith needs to be in more movies. I'm on board with this.
Is that
cast.
The Doctor?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. A couple of those guys, some of the most recent Doctors are getting a little bit more.
Eccleston's had an awesome career. the other one.
Yeah, the one that's not him or Matt Smith. I don't watch Doctor Who, so I don't really, I don't feel like I should know this shit. He was in
Fright Night.
But while you're looking that up, I was going to say, even Cumberbatch wasn't in Doctor Who, but was English TV star, and now he's getting...
David Tennant.
All right, yeah, cool.
And Cumberbatch is going to be a bigger star than all of them.
You're probably right. But, I mean, at least it's guys that have, you know, making the leap, not just from the small screen, but they're leaping across the pond and then going from the small screen to the big screen. So that's cool. Dakota Johnson and Michael Keaton join Need for Speed, again with the video game shit. They will add to the already impressive cast based on the car-themed video game adaptation, which includes Aaron Paul, Dominic Cooper, Imogen Poots, and Kid Cudi. Set to speed into theaters February 7th, 2014. Why are these people doing this?
This story pisses me off because I have no interest in video game movies,
no.
Let alone car video game movies.
Right.
But Aaron Paul is like the lead in
Why is he doing that?
Yeah, I'm into it. Dominic Cooper needs to be in more high-profile roles because he's fucking awesome. Imogen Poots, Michael Keaton, and Dakota Johnson of Ben and Kate, RIP. But, like, I'll see it. The cast is enough for me to see it.
I want to
know. Put Dakota Johnson in more movies. She has a lot more time free now.
The producers of this film, I want to know what pictures they've got of Aaron Paul and Michael Keaton that make these people think they have to do this movie. Aaron Paul could do whatever he wants to do, and we're getting Need for Speed.
Maybe the script is awesome.
Maybe it is. Kristen Wiig can do just about whatever she wants to do, and apparently she wants and will join the cast for Anchorman 2.
That's one of those that you see, and it's like, oh, that makes sense.
Absolutely.
It's like, oh, yeah, I'm kind of surprised she wasn't in the first one.
That's just what I was thinking. I had to double check that, because there were so many people that are in that movie just for a little bit. And like, wait, was she? No, she wasn't, but I'm glad they fixed that around for this time. Jane Levy to headline In a Dark Place. She'll star in the Bharat Nullari-directed thriller as an American hired by a London family to take care of a doll that they treat as human.
Sounds terrible, but keep putting Jane Levy in, like, headlining roles.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Kind of sounds like Lars and the Real Girl, but
with
weirder.
A horror twist, yeah. Even though Love Object was Lars and the Real Girl with a horror twist, but...
Eh. Maybe this...
I like her. Keep putting her in movies.
I'll second that. Emotion. Ben Kingsley, Mark Duplass, and Jennifer Aniston sign on to star in Justin Reardon's sci-fi comedy, Convention, the story, which is being compared heavily to Charlie Kaufman's work, centers on a brother and sister who create a five-sided box that could destroy the universe.
Yeah.
It's like that box, the movie The Box.
I don't like Jennifer Aniston, but I could see her having good chemistry as like Mark Duplass's sister. And like in a comedy with a weird... I like it. I mean, Mark Duplass would pretty much put me in the seats for anything. But
I think Ben Kingsley's an interesting choice for that. I mean,
he's the villain, so it makes sense.
Exactly. He's kind of doing that nerdy villain kind of... not that he's nerdy, but he's going to show up as a villain in a lot of nerd-centric movies. Yeah?
Yeah.
So maybe he's being typecast. I don't know. Now, we talked about Aaron Paul. Why is he doing Need for Speed? I guess the other half of Aaron Paul... Bryan Cranston, he's got himself another movie role here, along with Elizabeth Olsen eyeing Gojira. That I'm excited for.
I am. I mean, the cast is... Aaron Taylor Johnson is a weird choice for the lead, but...
Sure.
I'm all for it. Put Cranston and Elizabeth Olsen in there? All right.
They're both fine. I'm guessing there's going to be a giant monster, which will be all
rumor
right.
Rumor has it there are three giant monsters.
No shit.
Yeah.
That's exciting. Well, I hope one of those monsters is not an anti-dentite.
That's a good joke, Ryan.
Thanks, Dave. Tom Hardy to Race Against Time in Locke for director Stephen Knight. Eastern Promises, Dirty Pretty Things.
He wrote Eastern Promises and Dirty Pretty Things, which both pretty damn good movies. He's directing this. He's directing Tom Hardy. I'm into it. The plot sounds like shit, but I like what Knight's done as a writer so far, and I kind of have a thing for Hardy, so...
And you think that there's a distinct possibility that Tom Hardy will show his penis in this movie?
I doubt it, but I'll still see it.
Eastern Promises?
Yeah, but there were no dicks in Dirty Pretty Things.
No, but, you know, Tom Hardy's already shown his dick.
Would you watch Tom Hardy and Viggo Mortensen wrestle naked in the shower?
I mean, I watched Viggo Mortensen wrestle naked in the shower, and I've watched Tom Hardy wrestle naked in a prison. So, I mean, I guess I feel like I've already seen them do nude wrestling. If they were just doing it with each other at this point, what difference does it make? I mean, I watch that every time my head hits the pillow and the lids close. That is what I see. Tom Hardy and Viggo Mortensen fight.
But yet I get crap for saying how cut Chris Pratt can get.
Well, yeah, because that's just gay. I'm just talking on the real here. Watch those dudes knife fight all the time. And by knife fight, I mean stab each other with their dicks. Kristen Stewart and Elizabeth Banks join Jim Sturgess in The Big Shoe, the erotic comedy from the secretary director, Steven Sheinberg.
Way to really branch out from that erotic comedy secretary you did.
Was that really a comedy?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
But it just sounds very similar to Secretary. But I love Elizabeth Banks.
Yeah, I do too. I like Jim Sturgess. Fine. Kristen Stewart really does nothing for me.
She used to. She has that Bella stigma, but she's actually a really, really good actress when she's not mailing it in.
Yeah, I mean,
which is what she's done since Twilight.
She was fine in Adventureland. That was kind of in the Bella wheelhouse thing.
That was right at the beginning of the
right.
Bella wheelhouse.
I mean, I haven't, not that I've seen her in that much else, but I mean, it just, that doesn't move the needle for me at all. I could give a shit less. Unless Elizabeth Banks is going to pee on her or, you know, make her pee herself. I think that's what happened, right?
I haven't seen Twilight.
Well played. Elle Fanning, Nicholas Holt, Cody Schmidt McPhee, and Michael Shannon join the Jake Paltrow-directed sci-fi thriller Young Ones, which makes sense because most of those folks are young.
That's an awesome cast, too. I'm on board just because of the cast on that one.
Fair enough. A lot of good sci-fi casts coming together.
Yeah, there's a lot. It's going to be a big few years for sci-fi, I think.
Take that, nerds. Rejoice. This is where we left Sean Levy. The director of Night at the Museums 1 and 2 has announced his next projects. And would you believe that one of them is Night at the Museum 3? Be released in December of 2014. Before he heads back to the museum, we'll team with Jason Bateman for This Is Where I Leave You. Bateman will play the lead. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Zoe Saldana, Ilsa Fisher, Katherine Hahn, Ari Grainer, and Amy Adams all vying for roles with the production of this movie to start this May or June.
That's an awesome list of actresses trying to get in there.
And I don't think they're all. I think Amy Adams is actually up for a different role than all the other actresses.
But, I mean, I'm not a Sean Levy guy. He does what he does well. Like, he hit big with Real Steel and obviously The Night of the Museums. But he doesn't interest me. As much as I like Bateman, I don't like the choices Bateman's made with his career.
This one I think you might like. It's about a Jewish dad that dies, and his family doesn't get along, so he makes them all sit, when they call that Shiva, when you just have to like sit around with the body. Kind of like a funeral, except it happens in your house, and you just can't go anywhere. So I think they all have to live in one house and see what happens when things...
Start getting real and stop getting polite.
Dead. Yeah, I don't know. I think at least the plot of that one sounded interesting, and we're going to get another Night at the Museum, so I guess that's not a huge surprise. Robin Williams, Joel McHale, and Lauren Graham sign on for the Christmas comedy, A Friggin' Christmas Miracle. TV director Tristram Shapiro will be making his feature debut based off a script written by Phil Johnston, who wrote Wreck-It Ralph.
I love Joel McHale.
Sure do.
I don't want his career to go this path. So it's Joel McHale, Robin Williams, and then the brother have to make an 8-hour round trip overnight because they forgot somebody's presents back home. The title's going to change. There's no way A Friggin' Christmas Miracle stays. I like Joel McHale, but I want better from him, I guess.
Well, I mean, maybe the script will be good. I mean, I don't know
That's the only thing that has me interested.
What else Johnston's done. Yeah. But, I mean, I did think Wreck-It Ralph was pretty good. So I'm willing to give that a try. And, I mean, Robin Williams can be real hit or miss. But really,
More miss this phase of his career.
Maybe recently. But I think on the whole, I like him more than I don't. So, what the hell. I'll give it a try. Well, Dave, that's going to do it for our news this week. It's probably not news to you that tomorrow is Valentine's Day. I think that's when that Saint Valentine got rid of all the snakes from Africa. Is that it?
I don't follow history.
Yeah, I don't either. Or snakes, for that matter. But what we do follow is movies. So Dave and I are going to give you our top 5 chick flicks as selected by dudes with dicks. our really only criteria for this is it's got to be a movie that we've seen, which does rule out quite a bit of chick flicks because we don't like them.
Yeah, and I didn't count anything that I felt was made with guys in mind. Like, I think the ultimate one of that is like Jerry Maguire, where at the heart of it, it's a chick flick, but there's enough there for guys.
Yeah, that's kind of, as soon as he mentioned that rule, that's the one that I picked out. And it didn't make my list, but I like it. I think it's a chick flick.
I love the movie.
I would have counted it, but I just found some other ones that I liked better, so I didn't. But Dave, why don't you lead off? What is your fifth favorite chick flick of all time?
Hitch, starring Will Smith, Kevin James. Kevin James wasn't too Kevin Jamesy, and Will Smith was charming, as always. It was weird because it was a romantic comedy that focused more on the men. Maybe that's why I liked it. Maybe it was just actually charming and enjoyable. Something about it, I actually kind of enjoyed it.
So it's not, would you say it's good for a chick flick, or it's a decent movie?
Definitely good for a chick flick. It might be a decent movie.
I think that's where we're...
Because I'll watch it. If it's on like FX and nothing else is on, I'll leave it on because there's some legitimate good laughs in it. Like, there's some funny parts. It's very formulaic as far as a chick flick. It's very like chick flick formula, but Will Smith is almost worth watching in almost anything. So,
fair enough. My number five is actually even more recent than Hitch. It's Warm Bodies from just a couple weeks ago. I went out to see that. I wouldn't say that it's laugh out loud funny, because it's really not. Nicholas Holt does do a great job, though, with very little, as he is a zombie through the movie. I think it's more about love as an emotion rather than any one particular relationship, but I actually did kind of enjoy the movie, and I think it could be considered a chick flick. It's kind of heavy on that love sappy stuff.
Well, it centers around the love sappy stuff. So.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, that's kind of a plot device, so to speak.
My number four also centers on the love sappy stuff and asks the age-old question, can men and women really be friends? Mine is the classic, one of the chickiest of chick flicks, but a great movie, When Harry Met Sally. Legitimately funny. Billy Crystal is at his Billy Crystal-iest. Meg Ryan is awesome.
Like, at her Meg Ryan-iest?
Yeah, it's just a good movie. There's a lot of like legitimate laughs in it. It's just a fun time.
You're right. That's one that I consider it a comedy. I guess it could be a chick flick, but you know, maybe we're trying to paint it with too fine a brush. It is just a good movie though. And I think if you had to sit down with a girl that liked chick flicks, she'd probably be able to get through that one and it would be fine. My number four is definitely a chick flick. It's definitely a love story. So much so that that's the title of the fucking movie. Called Love Story from 1970. It was directed by Arthur Hiller, who did The Out-of-Towners, which was pretty decent, and Man of La Mancha, not as decent. Starring Ryan O'Neal and Ally McGraw, it is incredibly, incredibly sappy, lots of melodrama, but, you know, love means never having to say you're sorry. You'll never have to say you're sorry after sitting through this with a chick, because she will fuck you. I guarantee it.
My number three, I shied away from the rom-coms and just went for a straight romantic like love story. Gets kind of sappy, but it's kind of badass in the same time. Untamed Heart from 1993 with Christian Slater, Marissa Tomei. It's actually like a really good movie. I saw it three times in the theaters. 14-year-old Dave did. It's just a fun movie. Like, not fun. It's not fun, but it's a good movie.
I think I can see like our lists are starting to kind of take shape. You're picking movies that are good. I'm picking movies that are sad. My next movie, maybe it's not a chick flick, but it definitely centers around a relationship. Two folks that certainly do love each other, but these two maybe a little bit younger. It's from 1991. My Girl, directed by Howard Zeef. Who amongst us was not in love with Anna Chomsky at
the
time?
She grew up so hot.
Yeah, she did all right for herself. But you know, when I think back to Veda, like, that was such... Everybody wanted to be friends with that girl. She was awesome. And her and little Mac just being the bestest of buddies. And you thought, you know, wouldn't this be cute if they can just grow up and get married? But he can't see without his glasses.
And that's one of my favorite death scenes in any movie.
The favorite in that, like,
it's
it'll
hilarious.
Kick your balls? Or
yeah. I thought it was nice. I liked it a lot. Is that all you got on?
Yeah, that's all I got. I'm just trying to determine if you're a terrible human being. That was sad, man.
My number two is the most chickiest of all the chick flicks I picked. Because this one, I don't think they made with guys in mind at all. This was made just 100% for the women. But fuck me, I love it. 13 going on 30.
I like that film as well.
Sorry, Jennifer Garner, Andy Serkis, Mark Ruffalo. It's a fun movie. She's really fucking good. And a lot of time rom-coms, if you look at them from like a movie standpoint and not just a cheap date kind of standpoint, they're boring because nobody's doing anything interesting. You put, you know, Jennifer Garner playing a 13-year-old girl in an adult's body, that's interesting.
It's kind of like Big, but with
a
more focused on the relationship.
And it was really, it's actually really good. Like, she's really fucking good in it. Like, she's so charming. And
very,
like,
different from how she usually is in everything else. Like, she has a bit of a personality in this movie.
Yeah, she has a lot of personality, and it's just so fucking funny. I love that movie. Like, I'll legitimately claim that I love 13 going on 30.
Yeah, that's a solid choice. And I'm a little surprised that there are no Jennifer Garner movies in my top five. There is, however, Jennifer Garner was not my first love. I think this next movie, probably the two female leads, I guess you would say, were probably locked in some kind of death struggle to be my first love. It was from 1999, 10 Things I Hate About You. I goddamn love this movie. I'm pretty sure it's a chick flick, I guess. Chicks seem to like it, but I think it's kind of funny, too. I was absolutely in love with both of the Stratford sisters. And Heath Ledger, I thought, was really, really good. And Joey Gordon-Levitt, before he was kind of Joseph Gordon-Levitt, was really, really good in this movie, too. I think it's a great combination of humor and whatever else girls like in movies, but I think it's all there equally.
I've never seen it.
You should check it out.
So I can't add anything.
Check it out. It's good. Or you could just wait for the sequel.
That's not a sequel. It's just made by the same person.
But
10 Things I Hate About Life?
Yeah. I mean, no, it's probably not a direct sequel because I don't think...
there was a TV show.
Yeah, there was, which was kind of a spinoff, but I think it had the dad was in both the movie and the TV show.
My number
Larry
one.
Miller. Yeah.
This one, it's hard to consider it a chick flick because I've loved it. So it's one of my favorite movies. But then when you look at it, there's really no other way to describe it because it totally is a chick flick. But it goes back to what I said about Hitch, where it centers on the male character. This is a chick flick that centers 100% on Lloyd Dobler. Say Anything. Absolutely a chick flick when you look at it, but I fucking love the shit out of that movie.
I think it is a really...
Like, I don't think you want to consider it a chick flick just because... Because
it's a good movie.
Because it's so good and it's so easy to love, but it's... When you look at everything about it, oh, it's a fucking chick flick, but it's so fucking good.
But I guess, you know, like, as big manly men that we are, what is a chick flick? It's maybe a movie that focuses very strongly on a romantic relationship and feelings and shit like that. And that movie definitely does that. And it's got, you know, I think Harry Met Sally that have like classic scenes in them that everybody, you know, when you think about a relationship, you think of, oh God, is he going to do the Dobler? And people did that. And I think that just proves how good of a movie it was that people actually thought that was a good idea when there were boomboxes. My number one, also one of my favorite movies of all time. I guess it's not necessarily what I would consider a chick flick. I would put it more in like the fantasy, action-adventure type thing. And it's funny. It's funnier than shit. But it is a perfect combination of goddamn everything.
I'm assuming I know what it is, and I never would have guessed. When you think about it, yeah, it's a chick flick. I never would have.
Absolutely, it's a chick flick.
Didn't even pop in my head that it was a chick flick. But yeah, it totally is.
I mean, the entire reason that he goes on this adventure is to get the love of his life back. It's The Princess Bride from 1987. I'm not a huge Rob Reiner guy, but this is a perfect movie.
It absolutely is a perfect movie. And had I considered it a chick flick and it came to me, it would have been on my list. Not arguing that it's a chick flick because it really is. I just didn't think about it. It is a perfect movie. I don't know that there's any other way to describe it.
No, I don't know what else... You know what you would change about it. I mean, you know, Fred Savage at the beginning of the movie, like, oh, this is a love story. There's a kissing and ew, ew, ew. But by the end of it, I don't care how manly of a man you are, and they don't come manlier than Fred Savage. You know, you've completely flipped, and you
so
want
many,
them
like,
to get together.
The characters,
yes.
The scenes, like, it's a classic. Like, I mean, that's, you figure between the five of us each, Rob Reiner's got two movies on here, and of all the movies, those two,
they're probably the best.
Easily have the most, well, outside of the In Your Eyes boombox, they have the most iconic scenes. But yeah, did you have any also-rans?
I mean, we did mention Jerry Maguire. That would have been an also-ran for me. I kind of toyed with the idea of putting Casablanca on there, but I don't think that's really a chick flick. I like it a lot.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
No, that's not Casablanca. That's another one that I think you and Eric kind of got confused on. But yeah, those were it for me. I guess I don't have a lot of also-rans because I don't dabble that heavily into chick flicks. I like 13 Going on 30. I guess I would put that as maybe.
See, I left off Jerry Maguire because I felt like that was made more with dudes in mind. Crazy Stupid Love, same kind of thing. Your main characters were men, so I really didn't think it was made. I think it was more of a Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling movie than a chick flick. One I did leave off that I think you could consider it a chick flick, but it wasn't really a romantic movie. Mean Girls. That's a great fucking movie, and I don't know how else you would classify it other than...
I would call it a comedy.
Yeah, but it's definitely a chick-centric.
Sure, I guess.
And one that I would have been... I don't consider it a chick flick, but it really is. The Baxter, written by Michael Showalter from The State, starring him. It's a really, really good... Basically, The Baxter is the... essentially the guy in a love story that gets cheated on, that loses the girl to the other guy, and it's told from his perspective, and it's really fucking good. Like, if I were doing a list of like best romantic comedies, this would be at the top.
Are those different than chick flicks? Because I guess I look at those as similar.
This isn't, I don't really consider it a chick flick because it focuses more on the comedy than the romantic. It's kind of a send-up of romantic comedies almost, but it's really fucking good. If I didn't already have a Watch It Now for this week, it would have been The Baxter. I just couldn't fathom talking about like romantic movies without mentioning The Baxter because I love it so much. It's really fucking funny. It's really good. It's a different take on a romantic comedy.
I guess one more that I almost did sneak on my list, but I'm not sure... I don't think it's a chick flick. I mean, it's a movie that does deal with the relationship and kind of the good and bad parts of it. I want to say that Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is a chick flick, but I guess it's really kind of not. I mean, that would be like...
It's a story about love. I mean, at the heart of it, if you want to get technical, like maybe it is, but it feels more than that. And I think it's just natural movies that we love, we don't want to instantly... categorize them as chick flicks.
I don't mind.
Like it has a lot of the, if you're going through a checklist, a lot of the checklists that make something a chick flick, you can check off for Eternal Sunshine too, but it just feels like so much more.
Maybe it's just that's why my relationships never work out, because I think that's a chick flick, and I'm like, hey baby, let's watch this, because this is what's gonna happen.
It's a good fucking love story.
Yeah, it really, well, parts of it are. They were so good together. Those are kind of our five favorite chick flicks. If you've got a favorite, send it to us. Let us know. Don't be afraid. Dave and I are the manliest, lumberjackiest sons of bitches you're ever going to come across. And we just gave you five that we like. So if there's one that we missed, one that you know that you like, that your girlfriend made you watch, that your wife made you watch, and you're not too ashamed to admit you like it, let us know. Just for shits and giggles, moviesonup@gmail.com, or you can tweet those to us @moviesonup, or get at us on the Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup. Now it's about the time in the podcast where Dave and I shift looks at each other as to, do we have time for trailers, do we not? We have just enough time for trailers. It was kind of a, hey Dave, would you rather do trailers, or would you rather skip them? And I think
I'd rather skip this trailer.
Yeah, the first trailer we have on there is for a movie called Would You Rather. I wanted to put it on there because I believe, if not this week, it comes out on VOD next week, very soon. It stars Jeffrey Combs, who is Dr. Herbert West in The Reanimator, whom I love. Sasha Gray, a porno chick who's trying to make the turn into being a legitimate actress and not blowing dudes.
And Brittany Snow.
Yeah. It's essentially Saw, but with
a dinner different party. Spin.
Yeah.
Instead of being trapped and made to do different things, you come to this dinner party and you're asked, would you rather electrocute the guy across the table from you or yourself? That sums it up. Now give me 90 minutes of that and keep me interested.
It does, but I would rather see something like that than Saw 38 or whatever we're on at this point.
I'd just rather skip both of them.
Fair enough. So there's a 0% chance that you're going to go see that one. The next one, Zero Charisma. We talked a little bit about it last week in our South by Southwest section. That is where the hipster joins a tabletop D&D game and kind of clashes with the game master nerd.
And it looks interesting. Like, it's not Hollywooded up. Like, these guys look like people that sit around and play Dungeons and Dragons nonstop. I like that. Like, the lead of the movie does not look like somebody you would have carry a movie. I'm interested to see where it goes, because something like The Wild Hunt, the LARPing movie that came out a few years back, was a LARPing movie but took really fucking interesting turns. This could do the same. So I'm interested.
I was interested. The trailer, I'm interested in the concept. The trailer really didn't do anything for me. Actually, I was more excited before I saw the trailer. And maybe it's just because I thought it was going to be kind of funny. This doesn't seem like it's going to be
as... It doesn't look like a comedy.
No, it really doesn't. The next one has to be a comedy with Nick Offerman. Somebody up there likes me.
It looks good. Nick Offerman's real dry the whole time. It's got the chick from Teeth.
I was going to say, like, that would be my bonus chick flick is watch Teeth.
I don't know if it's Nick Offerman's son, but it stars a dude who just likes to fuck bitches, I guess.
Yeah, he's already on his second marriage to Jess Wexler from Teeth.
And he's fucking around.
Yeah, he's still fucking around. And he doesn't look like the kind of guy that should be fucking around. Or could be fucking around. So I guess that gives us all hope.
There's
right?
some decent laughs in the trailer, though, and it looks really dry. Yeah, Nick Offerman looks amazing.
Which is what you would expect from, I think he wrote the movie, at the very least. Dave's going to check on that right now. But it definitely does have kind of his voice that you get from his comedy, even in Parks and Rec. It is kind of very dry, very understated, but still goddamn funny if you're into that kind of thing.
No, he didn't write it. Or direct it.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Just stars in it.
That sounds like he did. I'll say that much. The next one, it's about a writer. It's about a family of writers. It is called Writers. It actually had another title earlier. You may be familiar with it as Stuck in Love.
Stuck in Love, yeah.
Right. But starring, speaking of guy who's no stranger to a rom-com, Greg Kinnear.
Greg Kinnear, slutty Kristen Bell, slutty Lily Collins, Logan Lerman.
Slutty Logan Lerman.
Like, that cast alone is enough. When Greg Kinnear wants to be good, he can be. And, I mean, he's probably been good in a lot of stuff I just chose not to see. But there's something about him that has a charm. And in this kind of role, it looks like he's going to be interesting in it. Lily Collins looks interesting. It just looks... I'm into it.
It's absolutely, watching the trailer, it's absolutely a Dave movie. If you hear me say that and you're kind of curious, what is a Dave movie? Watch the trailer for Writers and you'll figure it out. You mentioned, well, why would anybody want to have, or what movies is Paul Walker headlining that's not Fast and the Furious? Well, I got one for you. It's called Hours. It is a movie where his wife dies very early on in childbirth. Paul Walker is left with a baby that is on a ventilator. The only problem is Katrina hits, like, literally hours after she's born. So he's got to fend off looters, hand crank this ventilator, keep his baby daughter alive. It looks really, really heavy.
Yeah, no, it looks like Paul Walker's acting.
Yeah.
Which you haven't seen in a while. I don't know. It looks like it could be interesting. It looks like it's going to be too heavy-handed.
Yeah, I could see. It's tough to not have a heavy-handed Katrina movie, and then you put in a little baby in it, too, and that just sounds awful serious. Next movie, not serious at all, if you can't tell from the title. Big-Ass Spider. It is about a big-ass spider. It's going to be one of the midnight movies at South by Southwest. It absolutely has the midnight camp to it. It
stars Matt Parkman. From
Greg Grunberg. Yeah, I love that guy.
The fat cop from Heroes who gained even more weight. It just looks fucking stupid.
It looks like all of the spider movies that we talk about, except this one does have Fat Parkman, and I like that guy, so I'll watch it. The next movie, Dave wanted to cut really bad. It's called Into the White. It's essentially about British pilots and Nazi pilots during World War II. Their planes get shot down, and in the middle of some kind of blizzard, they have to shack together to survive. Stars one of the kids from the Harry Potter things.
Rupert Grint.
Yeah, who was one of the kids from the Harry Potter movies.
Ron Weasley.
Sure, I'll buy that. As soon as I saw the trailer, I thought, oh, this is like that episode of the Battlestar spinoff where Starbuck gets shot down and he has to live together with a Cylon so that they can both survive.
I don't know what any of those words mean.
Yeah. That's why I wanted to keep that in there, so I could educate you on Battlestar.
But yeah, it doesn't look, not much, I don't really, the trailer didn't do anything for me.
No, I don't give a shit about it other than I just wanted to make a BSG reference because I hadn't done it yet this podcast, so cross that off the list. Okay, make BSG reference. Now, tell you what's coming out in theaters. That's the way we roll. Coming out tomorrow, or today, I guess, as you're listening to this, Valentine's Day is a good day to die hard. If your girlfriend sucks, you may have to go see Safe Haven, which is the Nicholas Sparks piece of shit with Josh Duhamel and that chick from...
Julianne Hough.
Yeah. Dancing with the Stars.
Dancing with the Stars. Footloose remake, Rock of Ages. When the fuck are we going to give up on her?
Oof.
Everything she's been in is bombed.
I feel like to give up on somebody, you have to care about them first. I haven't
but
got
to
that point.
But they keep giving her shit.
This movie, people are going to see. Girls are going to make boys see this. This will be like an arm wrestling contest.
Because they put The Vow out this time last year, and it made $100 million.
Although, I got to believe that was probably going to be better than this.
Yeah. This is Nicholas. I could go on forever about Nicholas Sparks.
But seeing as how we're a little bit cramped on time, we'll save that for next week. Also coming out on Thursday, Beautiful Creatures.
Also looks like a piece of shit.
It kind of does, but
no, there's no kind. I will say this. Giant piece of
compared turd. To Safe Haven, I'd rather see Beautiful Creatures.
Yeah.
That's not saying a lot, but whatever. Friday is Escape from Planet Earth. That's the cartoon movie about the aliens that get captured and
try to escape,
from planet Earth. Sure. Limited release this week, Like Someone in Love, Murder 3, and No.
No is nominated for a Best Foreign Language Oscar.
Sure. Is it going to win? No.
People came out with money last week. $34 million for Identity Thief, $25 million for Die Hard and Safe Haven each. You got to consider it's opening on Thursday. We're going Friday through Sunday. So a lot of that money is going to be made on Thursday.
I'm going to say Safe Haven is going to be above, and I'm going to say Die Hard is under.
I think I'm there too. Actually, I think Die Hard will make more through the weekend, but Safe Haven will make a lot.
It'll make a lot initially, but I think that it'll still be okay on the weekend because there'll be girls that'll make the boys go see that. I think Die Hard will be one that people will wait to see on the weekend. I think that'll be close, but I don't think it goes over.
Yeah, and Beautiful Creatures, I don't even know where to go from there because the books aren't even that, it's not even that popular of a book series. Plus, it looks fucking terrible.
Yeah, it really doesn't look that good. Okay, if you don't want to go see Die Hard or the Julianne Hough movie, you're going to sit at home and watch the Netflix or whatever else. What should people watch, Dave?
Jack and Diane just got added to Netflix.
Is that the lesbian werewolf movie?
Lesbian monster movie, kind of. I watched it.
What we had been calling a lesbian werewolf movie.
I watched it because it popped up. I only added it because it is like a romantic movie. It is a lovey-dovey movie. It's not great. That's being generous. It's kind of terrible. But Juno Temple and Riley Keough, I think both give performances worth watching. Like, I think you look at both of those girls and think, like, fuck, if you get them in better movies, they're both stars. And I think they're on the way there. So it's worth watching just for their performances. But the movie is pretty fucking terrible. And I don't know. There's a monster in it, but I don't know if it's a monster movie.
Okay.
It doesn't make any sense.
Fair enough.
There are lesbians, though.
There are, in fact, lesbians. All right, real live lesbians. I'm not sure that there's any real live lesbians in my pick of the week. And my pick of the week is an homage to Rick of the Dead. It is Valentine's week, so go out and see My Bloody Valentine. See the original one. Don't see the 3D remake. It was not that good. But I think every time somebody watches My Bloody Valentine, Rick of the Dead gets his wings. So check that out. My Bloody Valentine.
Also, if you want some bonus ones that we brought up
Teeth!
Through the episode, Teeth is a good one. Bellflower and The Baxter.
So yeah, you got quite a breadth of movies.
And Catch and Release that you didn't bring up.
Yeah. Did I not? That was off air. Yeah.
Yeah.
I still think 13 Going on 30 is the better Jennifer Garner chick flick. But hey, Catch and Release, try that too. Why not? I did. I'll give it 2 thumbs up. Whatever. Hopefully you'll give us 2 thumbs up or a 5-star rating on iTunes. We haven't asked for that for a while, and you can tell because nobody's done it for a while. So put a flag somewhere. Give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, or you can just tell us you like us, and you can do that in any number of ways. You could put it in an email, say, "Dear Ryan and Dave, I like you guys." Send that email off to us at moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet at Dave. Use 140 characters to let him know how much you appreciate our free podcast, which is at moviesonup on the Twitter, or like our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup.
You can find me on Twitter at Dave Pacella. I have another show called Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave. That's on Twitter at Eric and Dave, ericanddave.com. That's Eric with a K. And if you're in Eric and Dave's mood, we are doing a live show Sunday, March 10th at the Funny Farm in Austintown, Ohio. That's downtown of Mojo's. My throat will be fixed by then. It's going to be a lot of
fun. If not, get there early.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. So
where do folks go to get tickets for that, Dave?
No tickets. I don't think there's tickets.
I don't know. I just
asking. I think just show up Sunday at 7. Sunday, sure. March 10th at 7.
Do you
7.
Have to be like Fidelio or anything like that to get in? Or?
I don't know. Just go downstairs. Because
the Funny Farm is downstairs. If you've been to Mojo's, it's actually a pretty sweet restaurant. I'll give them a free plug.
So don't, and like also it. Don't eat before you go because they serve food. So come out and have dinner.
Yeah,
eat,
definitely.
Eat and drink.
Be merry.
Yeah, and watch us talk and do
yeah,
stuff.
At least you'll have a good meal. But yeah, Mojo's is pretty badass. Funny Farm is downstairs. Anything else?
No, I'm good.
All right. Let's see. Next week, still... Next
still
week
have
we'll
a week
be,
before
yeah,
the
we'll
Oscars.
Be the week before the Oscars, so you still have time to get us your Oscar picks. You can either do the 10-point must system like Dave came up with, or just let us know who you think is going to win. If you don't get them to us by next week, we're going to assume that you're just a lying sack of shit when we get them the following week, and you're 100% right.
And I'll try to – I've been asked a couple times on
Film Ball
updates. Yeah. We'll do that in the next week or two.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll leave that for the week, maybe the week after the Oscars, because that'll be it. Yeah.
We'll crown our winner.
We'll crown our champion. We'll make a big deal out of it, and I don't know, they'll get a prize pack too.
Yeah, so next week, who knows what we'll talk about.
Crazy shit. But until next week, keep it up.